Kalakanya, the daughter of Kala. Api, also, Bubuje took possession of Paranjana Puram, the city of Paranjana. Balat, by force. Yaya, by whom? Obibhutaha, being overwhelmed. Purushaha, a person. Sajaha, immediately. Nisaratam, uselessness. Yat, gets. Translation. Gradually, Kalakanya, with the help of dangerous soldiers, attacked all the inhabitants of Paranjana's city and thus rendered them useless for all purposes. You can repeat. Gradually, Kalakanya, with the help of dangerous soldiers, attacked all the inhabitants of Paranjana's city and thus rendered them useless for all purposes. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. At the fag end of life, when the invalidity of old age attacks a man, his body becomes useless for all purposes. Therefore, Vedic training dictates that when a man is in his boyhood, he should be trained in the process of brahmacharya. That is, he should be completely engaged in the service of the Lord and should not in any way associate with women. When the boy becomes a young man, he marries between the ages of 20 and 25. When he is married at the right age, he can immediately beget strong, healthy sons. Now, female descendants are increasing because young men are very weak sexually. A male child will be born if the husband is sexually stronger than the wife. But if the female is stronger, a female child will be born. Thus, it is essential to practice the system of brahmacharya if one wishes to beget a male child when one is married. When one reaches the age of 50, he should give up family life. At that time, one's child should be grown up so that the father can leave the family responsibilities to him. The husband and wife may then go abroad to live a retired life and travel to different places of pilgrimage. When both the husband and wife lose their attachment for family and home, the wife returns home to live under the care of her grown-up children and to remain aloof from family affairs. The husband then takes sannyas to render some service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the perfect system of civilization. The human form of life is especially meant for God realization. If one is unable to take to the process of Krishna consciousness from the very beginning of life, he must be trained to accept these principles at the fag end of life. Unfortunately, there is no training even in childhood, nor can one give up his family life even at the end. This is the situation with the city of Paranjana figuratively described in these verses. So, Kalakanya pipupuche puranjana puram balat yayabibhuta purushaha sadyo nisaratam ihat Om gana timpadandasya gananjana shalakya chakshur umiditam yena tasmai shi gurave namaha. So the actual secret to being able to renounce things as what Prabhupada calls the fag end of life. Of course, that word is not used so much in English anymore because it has other meanings, some pejorative meanings. So it's really not used so much. It was used in England, in the UK, about 50 years ago or 100 years ago. So we don't use that word now. So anyway, so the fag end means the end of life when you're all fagged out. That means you're just like, there's no energy left. That's really what it means. So in order to be able to do that, the secret is that one has to be trained in austerities and renunciation when one is young, before one gets married. One has to be trained in austerities and renunciation before one gets married. Now, as mentioned in the Bhagavatam, Brahmachari Gurukule Vasandandagrahitam. That he has to learn to Vasan, he goes Vasandanta. He has to learn to Danta, to tame his senses. But the most important aspect of this verse is Gurorhitam. That's actually very interesting. Hitam means benefit. Guror, of course, means guru. Gurorhitam. So he works for the benefit of the guru. There's other words in this particular verse. Archyan dasavan nicho. That he learns good behavior. Dasavan, he learns that he's a servant. That's actually also interesting. Before I go back to the Gurorhitam verse, he learns that he's a servant. And I've experienced in working with people from different cultures who come from a very, let's say, from a hierarchical culture. The hierarchical culture means that there's a lot of difference between high class and low class, or rich people and poor people. That people who are brought up in, let's say, in a so-called upper class, not really upper class, but richer situation in a hierarchical culture, actually become very, very proud and adverse to performing menial service. I've seen that in different countries. People come and they. I remember in the kitchen one time I was asking someone to clean, and this lady said, "I'm not a para todos." That means in Spanish, "I'm not for everything." Para todos means for everything. She said, I was brought up, I had someone tie my shoelaces when I was young. You know, practically, you know, tying your shoelaces, pretty good. No one ever tied my mother did when I was a kid. But as soon as she could teach me how to tie my own shoelaces, I tied them. I brushed my own teeth when I was young. But there's people who are brought up not tying their own shoelaces, not brushing their teeth. You know, I'm not talking about an electronic toothbrush either. I'm talking about, you know, someone who brushes your teeth for, you know, seriously, who does everything for you. All you do is, like, throw your clothes on the ground and magically they appear the next morning pressed. So people brought up in such a situation, they become very proud and they don't learn that they're a servant. It's very hard for them to teach them, even when they join the Krishna Consciousness Movement. And they also look down upon other devotees. You know, there's this hierarchical concept that, you know, I'm more educated, I'm from a higher class, the other devotees are from a lower class, or not as educated, or from a poorer family, or from a different race. I mean, it's really interesting, people brought up in that particular consciousness. But the brahmachari training is dasavan. That means they're full of service. Like we have our word Bhagavan means full of opulence. That's a name for Krishna, Bhagavan. So he has the six opulences, which we're not going to talk about now. But dasavan means he's just like a servant. Gopi Bharata Padakamala Dasa Dasa Dasana Dasa. He's a servant of a servant of a servant of the Lord who maintains the gopis in Vrindavan. So an advanced devotee understands that he's actually a servant, even if he has a position of spiritual master. Anyway, dasavan nicho, good behavior. So I want to go back to this one thing, the gurorhitam, which is really important. Why is it important? Because when I first joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement, we were all brought up with the concept that we were servants of Srila Prabhupada. And if Srila Prabhupada gave some particular standard, that was, you know, that was absolute, basically. Like a Prabhupada said, 16 rounds, or Prabhupada said I'll give you one example I just found out about this morning, that some people say that we're not supposed to sell prasadam in the restaurants, so they distribute in their restaurants boga. And they're disciples of Prabhupada, but they haven't imbibed them. The point is, I'm not specifically criticizing that, but they're taking other opinions. You know, they're shopping for opinions, or they're giving their own opinion, using their own teeny brain to understand Krishna consciousness. And they haven't learned the standard of the Krishna consciousness movement, that Srila Prabhupada's direction, spiritual direction, is absolute. It's not that you can be bringing in other opinions from other societies that contradict Srila Prabhupada's opinion, Srila Prabhupada's direction, isn't it? And so we see that people who have not learned that particular point, not imbibed that during their brahmachari years or early years in the movement, then they become very confused, and then they engage in something called eclectic religion, which is actually very common in America right now. Like America, generally, people don't follow one. I mean, talking about the young educated people. I'm not talking about the older people who are maybe members of the Catholic Church and consider the Pope to be the all-in-all. And I'm not criticizing that. That's neither here nor there. But the young people, they engage in elective religion right now. Elective, not even religion, elective spirituality. Let's use that word. You don't want to use the word religion. You don't want to use the G word, G-D, with them. Actually, in Judaism, in really conservative and orthodox Judaism, they won't even spell out G-O-D. They'll say G-D because you're not supposed to say the name of God. Interesting. So anyway, I mean, what you find in America is a selective type of religion. In other words, you can take from this organization and that organization, or even within Gaudiya Vaishnavism, you can take from this guru or this acharya, and, you know, whatever appeals to you. It's like when you go to the hospital, and they give you, or the doctor, and they give you some diagnosis, and you just tell them, I'd like to get a second opinion. And you follow the opinion of the doctor, of whichever doctor, you know, you happen to like, even though his opinion may not be the best thing for your health. But, you know, just you accept the doctor's opinion that you like. So we find the same thing happening, the selective religion. You know, you take a little. Of course, in general America, you take a little bit from Buddhism, a little bit from Christianity, a little bit from the Hare Krishna movement. You need to become a vegetarian and offer your food to Jesus Christ. You know, you're mixing it, which is all right. I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying you do that. You do that, and you don't really follow any one person, and the word authority is sort of like a no-no. So Gurur Hitam, as far as the devotees are concerned, is to really imbibe that spirit and that connection with Srila Prabhupada. We've spoken about that before. To develop that connection with Prabhupada and see his position is very, very special. You know, above and beyond the position of other people. That's not to denigrate other people. It's not to say that we're special or anything like that. But that's just our connection with Srila Prabhupada. With Krishna is through Srila Prabhupada. So Gurur Hitam, yeah, that's what Gurur Hitam means. Basically, you know, Prabhupada said to do this, then it's all right. Prabhupada said, you know, 16 rounds minimum, then that's Prabhupada's standard. You know, that's what it means to be a follower of Prabhupada. Otherwise, devotional service becomes something relative than absolute. In other words, it becomes, we become on the mental platform, okay? So that's very interesting. So if one wants to renounce later on in life, because here we're talking about old age and Kalakanya, the time girl, then one has to have that sort of training when one's young. Especially the training of austerities and Gurur Hitam. In other words, that's brahmachari life. I remember in the early days of the movement meant real austerities, we slept on the floor, and sometimes we didn't even have a cushion. We just had, like, if it was hot weather, we'd just put like a straw mat on the floor and sleep on that. And sometimes the body would feel a little sore in different places when you do that. And sometimes we'd use our hands as a pillow. I mean, I'm not saying you should go be so radical, but we used our hands as a pillow, because we're quoting from Bhagavatam. It says, you know, what is the use of beds where earthly flats are there? What is the use of pillows when you have arms? And we really went to that extent. I'm not saying that we should go to that extent, because it was pretty austere. And we each had, at least the brahmacharis had like one box that they would get from the grocery store in which they would put all their worldly goods. You remember that, Apurva? And that was it. I mean, it's not that you had like big trunks and things. I mean, one grocery box, you put all the worldly goods. And you'd sleep in a room with like 30 or 40 other people. You don't know who would be next to you when you woke up in the morning. You'd share your clothes with everybody else. I mean, it sounds like torture. But it was actually very nice, because that's the time for austerities. That's the time for austerities. We enjoyed ourselves very, very much, because there was an anxiety. It was like that story of Sanatan Goswami when he had the 8 gold coins. Then the hotel owner wanted to kill him for those 8 gold coins, so he had his servant Ishan give back the coins. Of course, Ishan kept one, and he gave back 7 of the gold coins to the shopkeeper, because Ishan was trying to hold back. So there was no anxiety. Nobody's going to want to kill you when you have nothing. But when you have something, you know, then your anxiety, you protect. I wasn't concerned with protecting what was in my box, because there was no computer in the box. There was no iPod. There was nothing in the box except, you know, 3 dhotis and maybe a sweater and some socks. And that was it. All my worldly possessions. And I went to that extreme. From living in a very wealthy family with a sports car and everything like that, it was quite a change in life, you know, really radical change in life. But I remember being happy, because every night we would drink milk and hear a Krishna book, and I wasn't worried if someone was going to steal the stuff in my box. Now when I travel with locks, you know, and, you know, padlocks in my suitcase. And, you know, so many things, because we're so much concerned about all the material goods that we have. So there's more anxiety. Anyway, so I had that training. When you have that training later on in life, it becomes much easier to renounce things. And actually, it's not attractive later on in life when you get opulence. It's just like, it simply becomes, actually, in many cases, bothersome. Just like I was in New Orleans. I just came back from New Orleans, and they had this bed there where the mattress was this thick. And that's the regular mattress. The box spring was this thick. And I had to, like, pull myself up to get on the bed. Seriously. I mean, what I thought was that, God forbid, if someone were to fall off the bed, they'd probably break their neck, you know, or something. It'd be like falling off the first story of a building. And I said to the devotee, you know, what is this bed? He said, well, it's donated. It's $1,000 bed. You should enjoy it, Maharaj. You know, it was $1,000 bed, and someone donated, I guess, for a tax deduction, because, you know, they owned a bed store, and nobody would buy $1,000 mattress with today's economy. So at least they needed the tax deduction. So, but I looked, and they said, it's so comfortable. Then, you know, at night I climbed up on it, but it was comfortable, but all night long I was worried about falling off. You know, I said, you know, God forbid I should fall off, and then in the morning I had to be extra careful to get off of it. It's almost like a double-decker bed, but only one deck. So I was thinking, it's much nicer. Let me sleep on the floor. And they said, no, you can't. So because of my brahmachari training, I just didn't, you know, didn't look at it as an object of enjoyment. I thought, well, let me sleep on the floor. And actually, it became more anxiety. I experienced more anxiety with the bed than I did with happiness on the bed. Anyway, if one wants to sleep soundly, you have to be without anxiety. That's the real point. If you're in anxiety and distress, your mind's not peaceful, you're not going to sleep even in the softest bed. So, in other words, one's mind is very much inclined towards austerities, towards chanting, like that, and then it becomes enjoyable. Prabhupada said the children should be trained up, not artificially, not abusively, so that they actually enjoy it. It's like a game. I mean, obviously the Gurukulas that we had previously in ISKCON were too much. I mean, they went overboard. You know, they like saying, you got to enjoy this. You know, and enforcing austerity. But the children voluntarily take up austerity, like I did when I joined the Krishna Conscious Movement, at the right age. You voluntarily take up austerity, and then you enjoy it later on. And then when the body becomes uncomfortable later on, you're able to go on chanting. That's the real point. You know, just like I experienced this this morning, like somehow or other, anyway, my alarm clock rang like over one hour before I normally get up. And I didn't think anything. I didn't know it until I was already in the temple room. You know, it's just like, you know, because it was set an hour before, because that's when I was leaving on the week before, you know, because I had to get up early, do my DD service and everything. So I forgot to reset the alarm. So, you know, I woke up and I came to the temple and I said, first thing I saw was all lights were out, and I said, these stupid people, they can't even wake the deities up in time. I said, what's happening with looking on the Priya? You know, so I come in, everything's dark. You know, ready to yell at everybody. I'm ready to wake the deities up myself at 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, fortunately, I looked at the clock and I said, oh, I figured that. I figured out what was happening. And then I said, well, I guess I should just stay here and chant. I didn't have enough time to run back to my house, take a snooze, take another shower, change clothes again. So, but then, you know, anyway, and the body didn't feel too ecstatic because it didn't get enough rest. But then I just made myself chant. But then I actually started to realize more that I wasn't the body just by taking that extra austerity. Not the one that has to torture the body. That's demoniac, if you torture the body. I mean, obviously, I'll take a little rest later on because I didn't get enough rest last night. But the point is, just by really pushing the body a little bit more than I normally do. You know, normally I take care of it and, you know, coddle it and everything like that. So just by pushing a little more, and getting the rounds, and I was thinking how nice it is to get your rounds and all your rounds during the morning. You know, all six. I chant more than 16, and then read a little bit. I said, "Wow." You know, it was enjoyable, even though the body was not enjoying. Of course, bodies don't enjoy, but even though the body was sending some signals, you know, you'd rather be in bed. Or you'd rather do this, rather do that. You know, so you know, dealing with overcoming the bodily signals, or not in a harsh way, obviously. You know, I wouldn't do anything that would harm my health, but it really, you learn something, and then I was able to do that because of my brahmachari training in Krishna consciousness. So that's why the brahmachari life is extremely important. Then, as described here in this verse, one has to properly give up his material activities at a certain stage before he becomes incompetent, incapable of thinking or doing things. I mean, I'll give you an example. This week, I visited some devotees, a devotee in a nursing home, a long-term nursing home. And this devotee has, one of my godbrothers, he has Parkinson's disease, and also some memory loss and things like that. And so, you know, we visited him, and he has done a lot of service for Krishna. And, you know, he was pretty Krishna conscious in the nursing home. And I was arranging for him to have an MP3 player and some other things. You know, Ms. Pundarik. You know Pundarik, right? From Gainesville. He used to be temple president in Gainesville, Florida, many years ago. Very nice devotee. Anyway, ultimately, we're making arrangement to move him to New Taliban, where the devotees can take care of him. But that's another issue. So I was there in the nursing home, and he's Krishnanathi, goes out and chants his rounds and everything like that, and eats whatever they can give him and offers it to Krishna. But he was telling me about, he said, well, next to me, and he had a double room, is this, you know, famous doctor. It was a high-class nursing home, actually, not one of these lower-class nursing homes. He said, this famous surgeon doctor is next to me. And he wasn't there right then. He was going out for tests. And he says he's coughing up blood and this and everything like that. And I was thinking, you know, he had such an opulent life. And now he's just the doctor, of course. Obviously, he's a very rich man. Because to afford this nursing home, it's a very expensive nursing home. Punarik's there because, anyway, the government's paying for it. But he's just like an opulent life. And there he is, a doctor, you know, after all that. And he's just lying there, you know, just coughing up blood. And then they had pictures in the beginning. And when you enter the nursing home, they had like a TV screen with different pictures flashing of the happy residents of the nursing home. And I was actually thinking, and they were, of course, all old and everything like that, obviously. 90% of them are old or they have some other problems. I'm just thinking, and none of them are engaging in Krishna consciousness at the fag end of life. They're just trying to still squeeze some enjoyment out of this material body at the fag end of life. I said, this is ridiculous. I mean, of course, I couldn't do anything about it. I couldn't go with the kirtan through all the rooms and say, Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago. I mean, I would have loved to do that. It was a big nursing home. There were actually hundreds or maybe 500 people. I mean, I got lost trying to find Punarik there. We had to have a guide that took us to the room and took us out because I couldn't find my way out either. So, but I was thinking that these people are just like wasting. They're just waiting to die, trying to enjoy the old bodies in some way. And it's, if they had Krishna consciousness, you know, their minds would still be sharp. If they haven't engaged, like Prabhupada talked about here, hadn't engaged in so much sex life and other types of sense gratification when they were young, their minds would still be sharp and they'd be able to engage in Krishna consciousness at that point. Even, you know, Punarik, even though his body, he's having trouble with his body, you were able to talk to him about Krishna, about Prabhupada. He was bright-eyed and everything like that, whereas everybody else was, it was very, very dull there. So, anyway, so therefore there's a need to minimize sense gratification. Not only a need to be Krishna conscious or to cultivate Krishna consciousness, but to minimize sense gratification during this life, because that depletes the bodily energy. I was reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita about Lord Chaitanya's minimization of sense gratification after he took sannyas. I mean, they tried to offer Lord Chaitanya a bed. This is Jagannanda Pandit, who is Satyabhama. He tried to offer Lord Chaitanya a bed, you know, nice quilt and everything like that. And Lord Chaitanya absolutely refused to accept the bed. And finally, Swarup Damodar Goswami had to make sort of a quilt out of Lord Chaitanya's old dhoti, and he ripped up the plantain leaves and put them inside an old dhoti to make a quilt and a pillow. And also Jagannanda Pandit tried to offer Lord Chaitanya sandalwood oil. And Lord Chaitanya said, you know, people are going to think I'm a Dari sannyasi. So basically, one has to cultivate this sense. The point I'm making is one has to cultivate this sense of renunciation. Not harsh renunciation, but accepting everything favorable and reducing one's bodily necessities to what? I'm not saying bare minimum, but not more than you really need. Not more than you really need. And that's really hard because most of us, including myself, I mean, we're over consuming, over collecting and everything like that. I mean, if you look at my house, it's just like, no longer do I have one box that belongs to me, but I have, in my attic, I may have like 500 boxes. And, you know, computers going up to, you know, past my head, printers. You know, I'm using it in Krishna's service, but and I'm not saying I should give up all these things, but it's just like, and a closet that would make Imelda Marcos jealous. No, I'm not quite that. You don't know who Imelda Marcos is. She was the one who had like 10,000 pairs of shoes. She was the, So I'm just thinking, you know, what do I actually need to survive in this world? And why am I accepting so much? Of course, hopefully I'm accepting for preaching Krishna consciousness, you know, preaching Krishna consciousness, spreading Krishna consciousness. But one has to be very careful in this regard, not to collect too much. As stated in the Upadesham Rita Achahara Prayasascha Pajalpanimagaha, that collecting too much or eating too much, you know, eating to, like Lord Chaitanya said, one has taken the renounced order of life, he gave this instruction to Raghunath Das Goswami, one should not eat opulent food, nor wear fine clothing, nor think of the opposite sex, even in dreams. So, you know, so really one has to focus, in other words, focus more on Krishna consciousness. Not simply a question of material austerities, but you focus more on the goal of life. Especially as you get older, it's very important to focus more on the goal of life and not get so much into these other things that are deviate the mind from pure devotion. What's the goal of life? Achieving Krishna prema. I mean, we should never forget that. Never forget that we're here to love Krishna, to serve Krishna, and to help others love and serve Krishna. I mean, that can be our mission statement. That's what we're here for. To love Krishna, serve Krishna, and help others love and serve Krishna. Think about that. You should post that on your wall. That's what we're here for. And everything else, you know, and everything else is taken as assisting those particular goals. You understand? Love Krishna, serve Krishna, and help or facilitate others, not force others, but facilitate others in loving and serving Krishna. So any questions or comments about any of the points I made in class about old age? I mean, we will experience old age. When I saw these people in the old people's home, I mean, not the old people's home, it was a nursing home, then, you know, I just thought, you know, that's, I'm going to be there very soon, too. We're all going to be there. Yeah. Apurva?
What is the position of, say, a devotee whose parents have done some devotional service, they've taken a lot of shadow, that they're basically agnostics, they board in groups, and they're also in that position where they need assisted living, but they don't really have money to do that kind of thing.
What's the position of one? I mean, is it? Are you responsible for taking care of this? Is that the question? Or?
Yeah, the baby society.
The children take care of the parents.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I tell you what I told my mother. My mother has money, but I told my mother, I said, I'll take care of you, and I'll take care of you in the way I want to take care of you. You're going to take prasadam. And my mother got a little scared at that point. But, you know, on my terms, you know, kindly. I'm not going to subject her. Like, if I had to take care of my mother, I'm not going to subject her to austerities. We give her a nice place, you know, arrange a nice place for her and everything like that. Lord Chaitanya was very concerned about his mother. I mean, he didn't take care of her, but he went to Jagannath Puri because he followed the orders. Even when one's a sannyasi, which Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed, he followed the orders of his mother and went to Jagannath Puri rather than going anywhere else in India, because she wanted to be able to hear news about him on a regular basis. So, yeah, on our terms, on our Krishna conscious terms, yes, then that's fine. I mean, if they don't want that, that's their choice. You understand? I'm willing to take care of them on my terms, on the Krishna conscious terms. Nice facility, you know, we won't make them sleep on the floor or on a mat on the floor. Give them a bed, central heating, central air conditioning, but prasadam. No meat, no fish, no eggs, and Krishna's music playing all the time, and I'm going to come in and preach to them. And my mother would love it. Not in the beginning. That's happiness. Transcendental happiness is like poison in the beginning, like nectar at end. And she'll go back to Godhead if she does that. I offer that to her. My mother's not only an agnostic, I think she's an atheist still. But she'd have to accept it on my terms. You understand? That's the point.